Hi, this is Bill Thomas at Prairie Public. For the last several months, we've been working with a group in Bismarck called the Native American Development Center, led by Lorraine Davis, on a project called Native American Stories of Resilience. Lorraine had the idea of interviewing Native Americans in the Bismarck-Mandan area about hopeful stories, stories about adversity and overcoming adversity, about resilience, about bouncing back from challenges. She hoped this would help people who were part of Native cultures to hear these stories, and people who weren't part of Native cultures, too, to understand about some of the challenges and the successes that people had. The project was supported by the North Dakota Humanities Council and the Consensus Council. Lorraine interviewed a lot of people as part of this project, and you can actually see transcripts of those interviews and listen to them if you go to prairiepublic.org and Native Stories of Resilience there on the web. We'll hear some clips from some of those interviews during the coming hour. But first, I'm going to speak with Dakota Goodhouse. Dakota Goodhouse is a humanities scholar. He teaches at United Tribes Technical College, works with the Historical Society in North Dakota, and blogs a bit online as well. I asked him, after he had listened to many of the interviews, what he thought.
Well, there's a few things that stuck out to me, Bill, and that was throughout all these stories is a need to acquire some kind of education to better themselves and to become stronger people. One thing I noticed about the stories from the men is that when they reached into themselves, or when they reached out of themselves, they seemed to the element that seemed to sustain them, to build them, to strengthen their character, to lend them support when they needed it, was a spiritual element or a supernatural element.
And yes, I noticed that too, and in so many of the stories that it seemed like that connection was what enabled them to kind of pull out of the hard times they were having.
Yeah. A need to reconnect with family throughout both the men and the women's stories. For the men, it was a reach out for spiritual guidance that that carried them, that lifted them up, that strengthened them to become better people emotionally, spiritually, mentally. And in the case of a couple of them that I read and a few that I know, even physically, they're physically taking mm-hmm. care of themselves and in good health too. So that's what I got out of it.
Yeah. Now it was interesting that the connection with spirituality was important, though it took some different forms. In some cases, it was Christianity. In some cases, it was traditional. The traditional religion of their ancestors, the people who were talking.
Yeah.
So it wasn't always exactly the same form, but that did seem to be an important connection.
It did. As a Native person myself, as a theologian myself, I think the purpose of life that in the case of the stories of the men's stories of resilience is that they've kind of found it for themselves that the purpose of life is to grow in mind, in heart, and spirit with themselves, with their loved ones, with their fellow human beings.
Let's hear some people talking about that. This one is from Alan Demaray, Jr. He lives in Newtown with his wife and children. He's chief of staff for Councilman Spotted Bear for the Mandan, Hidatsa, and Arikara on the Fort Berthold Reservation.
When I had a spiritual enlightenment with the Holy Ones, where they came to me and visited me and spoke to me, and I was very fearful of them. But it showed me something, it taught me something, and in that vision, as a young man, a time when I was lost with alcohol and drugs and whatnot, they showed me the possibilities and the route I was taking in that moment. And I knew I had to overcome that. I was scared. The end result was an early death because I chose not to fulfill my destiny. And through my death, what they were showing me is I was going to affect hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of souls. And at the time, as a young man, I didn't understand that. I had no guidance, no one to go to, no one that could steer me back on the right path. So I had to go through that, trying to figure out how one life can affect so many. So I ended up moving back to Fort Berthel. My dad was residing there at the time. I was hurt. I was broken. I was cold. I needed to heal. And at the time, my dad, he sobered up and he was on the red road and he followed the prayerful life. And I had to mend and grow with him. So things occurred where another avenue opened up for myself through our sun dances, through our sweat lodges, through our culture. And I desired this so much in life, kind of being a wanderer out there, knowing I have a people, but yet not knowing either. So I dedicated a great portion of my life to trying to live the way Creator wanted me to live. And I had to go through many different experiences, experiences that might sidetrack me from my purpose. So going through that was a very difficult, painful, loving, enlightening, what everything has entailed in life, the light and the dark. And everything in between, I was now discovering that. And the greatest discovery I was making in that time was who I was.
That was Alan Demaray Jr. Next is Robert, or Bobby Gray Eagle. He's married with two sons. He's from the Lake Traverse Reservation, the Sisseton, Wahpeton, Dakota, Oyate. Lives in Bismarck, where he is responsible for the 160 Transportation Security Administration officers within North Dakota.
Where I'm at today is because of an encounter I had with Creator God in my home, in my bottom of the bucket. I was on the verge of divorce and just laid off and addicted and couldn't stop. And basically just read a book that was talking about, I believe it was like, it was called Power for Living, but read that book and ended up staying up a long time. And I had to jump. Nothing could get any worse than where I was at. So I jumped and I decided to become a follower of Jesus Christ. And my life changed. It just changed overnight. I can't explain it. I tried explaining it to my wife. She was like the first skeptic, just out of the gate, like this guy's just lying again, and he's gonna take our family down even a worse road. And over the course of 3 years after that, because that happened on November 29th of 2000, after that happened, it was just like my life just changed. Everything just started aligning. It was like right as soon as I got connected to Heavenly Father, it was just like this provision and this power and this. I had access to resources I never had before, and just I was like, okay, there's something here.
That was Bobby Gray Eagle. Here are some thoughts from Dr. Russ McDonald. He's president of United Tribes Technical College, originally from Fort Totten.
And so you've seen a lot of sweat start coming up, and so we start being exposed to that back then. And so those are on the cultural side, but I come to an understanding now the importance of that in regard to our everyday lives, in regard to our spirituality and prayer, and the importance of those things in regard to where I've come, where I'm at today, is that I had a hard time with alcohol and drugs coming out of high school and being in the service. And that's why I was kind of delayed there, and that's why it took me 4 years to get a 2-year degree. So I've learned, you know, but at the same time, I look back at those things and those hard times that I come through, and the times I was in jail and the fights I got in, and some relationships difficulties that I had. And I realized that all those things that I came through have made me who I am today. So those things, I'm sorry for those times I may have hurt anybody, but that at the same time, if I learn from those things, that today I know that I don't want to go back to that lifestyle anymore. But instead, I want to have a good relationship with the Creator and live and be a good man. And if I do that part, then he's going to help me to take everything. He's going to take care of everything else for me. He's going to help me with my wife and my relationship with my wife, who I've been married to now for 19 years, going on 20 years, and been sober for 21 years. And so all those things are a result of that, building that relationship with the Creator. And then because of that, I don't worry about my relationship with my wife. I try to treat her good, and as a result of that, she treats me good. And then and I try to be a good parent, grandparent, because I'm trying to be a good man, I'm able to do that. I'm able to be a good provider. So those are the things that I think are the foundation for everything else. Everything that I've shared with you is a result of that. And then and the Creator's been that that mainstay for me, that gave me that the strength and the wisdom to make decisions that were beneficial to myself and my family.
You are listening to some elements of the project Native American Stories of Resilience. You can see more about it at prairiepublic.org. If you go to Native Stories of Resilience on our website, you can see all the interviews that have been done and transcripts of them. You can listen to them, photos of some of the people. The person we just heard, that was Dr. Russ McDonald, president of United Tribes Technical College. Next, we'll hear, before rejoining our conversation with Dakota Goodhouse, humanities scholar, we'll hear some thoughts from Scott Davis. He's a proud member of the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe and married to Lorraine Davis. They have children and grandchildren, and he is head of the North Dakota Indian Affairs Commission.
So it's something important that I think about when I think about our past, whether it's a person or a tribe, is that we need to understand the wrongs that were done to us, but also to learn from it, to gain experience, and to grow in a healthy way from those experiences. So, and that's what I've tried to do, you know, with my adversity in my life too. So, but again, it's just it's part of life, you know. And I think when there is adversity or there is struggles, you know, a lot of us may utilize prayer, may utilize a ceremony, may utilize a church. Some may use a doctor, may use medication, whatever that may be. But the key to all that is that there's got to be self-work, self-equity behind that. I've been a big believer that, you know, that God can create all things. God can cure all things. There's no doubt about that in my mind. But I think some of us tend to believe that, you know, a certain ceremony, a certain church, a certain pill, a certain medication may fix us. And I don't think there's ever a fix for anything. The only way we can do our best to fix things is to fix them ourselves, within ourselves. And that's what I call self-sovereignty, sovereignty of oneself, where you have true ownership of your being, of who you are, of where you want to go, of what direction you want to go. So I'm a big believer in self-sovereignty, and controlling your direction, where you go. And so those are things that I guess I've come to learn over the years, you know, and knowing your limits, you know, knowing your strengths, you know, and knowing how to pick yourself up when you fall. And it's certainly okay to fall. And I think if you don't fall from time to time, that means you're not trying. That means, to me, that means that you're not willing to take a calculated risk. And I really believe that we all should take calculated risks in our life. You know, you need to take, you know, a next step forward. But understanding the faith, you know, in yourself, the confidence in yourself, the faith of God helping you, guiding you, I think is probably the most important step in giving you the confidence to take that step.
Scott Davis. Returning to our conversation with Dakota Goodhouse, we had been talking about how he saw some commonality among some of the interviews, that many of the men, spirituality was important to them in coming back from difficult times, yet it was a little different, not totally, but somewhat different for the women.
For the stories of the women, it seemed a different type of catalyst that changed them, that motivated them.
Though the spirituality was there with many of the women as well.
It was. And I know that being a parent is part of all, seems to be a part of most of the stories.
Yes.
Yeah. And I say most because there's a few that aren't parents. But for most of them, parenthood is a part of that change and motivation to become better, stronger people for their new loved ones, their new additions to their family. But especially that seems to be most important for the women in these stories of resilience.
Yes, and not always right away. Sometimes it took a little while. One story of a woman who had a child quite young, and her motivation to get her life into better shape was she wanted to get that child back because one of her aunties was taking care of it, and that auntie wasn't going to give it back until, you know, she knew the child was going to be well taken care of.
Yeah.
Well, let's hear some excerpts from the interviews with some of the women. This first one is from Anita Charging. She's from the Three Affiliated Tribes and has three children, works as a counselor.
Before I had my son, I did get into a relationship with someone from back home. Mm-hmm. It lasted almost 5 years, and the 2.5 years into it were pretty good. Mm-hmm. And then I decided to move home so I could be closer to him. And it's just like he changed from day to night. I mean, mm-hmm. he became possessive. Mm-hmm. I think from a distance he couldn't control me, but once I moved home. Mm-hmm. And then for about the next 2 years, it was kind of hell. Mm-hmm. I went through a domestic violent relationship. Mm-hmm. And as grown up and as sheltered as I was, mm-hmm. you know, it kind of almost made me crazy in a way, because I was taking it, I was hiding it from my mom and dad, because my dad would have killed him. My dad, you know, never touched my mother. You know, he just believed you did not hit women, and mm-hmm. he would have. So I spent my time trying to hide I was being abused. And then my son was born into it. And that's when I decided I was going to move back to Bismarck. And maybe I did it subconsciously to put that distance again. Mm-hmm. But we did eventually, under duress, kind of break up. Mm-hmm. And that, I think, played a huge part in my deciding to go for a social work degree too, because again, it was helping people with mm-hmm. what I had been through.
Anita Charging. Next, we'll hear from Twyla Baker Demaray, who is from Newtown. She lives there with her husband, 7 children. She is the president of Noeta Hadatsah Sanish College, formerly the Fort Bertel Community College.
We draw resilience from all of the spectrum of our lives, from the multiple roles that we play throughout our lives, because I'm not just a college president. I'm not just, you know, my titles or my degrees or anything like that. I'm very much more so. I think I draw my credence and my my clout, my credibility from the roles I play as a daughter, as a wife, a mother, a clan mother, a clan member, a tribal member, the different societal roles that I play. That's where I draw my credibility from, because I don't know if people notice in Indian country, it's not, oh, well, hi, how are you? What do you do? It's not necessarily that in Indian country. It's more, hi, nice to meet you. Who's your folks? You know, that's how you meet people. That's how you introduce yourself. And we have a tendency to introduce ourselves via our clans or our family names or who we're related to, who we're descended from. And that's how people know us, and that's how we establish ourselves, and that's the role that we play in our societies. And that, I think, is a traditional value, and it's something that has existed for quite some time. You play a role. You have a job to do from the moment that you're born in our tribal cultures and in our tribal societies and our communities. At least amongst my own tribe, we'd had those clan roles and those relationships and the way we reckoned our kin. And those were vitally important because they defined how you lived your life, who took care of you, and who you take care of. And those roles were critical to us as people, because we relied on each other a lot, and we had to, because it was a life or death thing back in the day. You know, nowadays we kind of pull away a little bit, and we kind of I think we kin a little bit towards the Western mindset and Western way of thinking a little bit too much, when our way of doing things was perfectly fine and actually functioned better, because there were fail safes for families. There were those relationships that existed there just purely because a son or a daughter needed to be disciplined or needed to be taught or praised, or they needed to, in turn, they needed to take care of somebody else, you know. So it had those relationships built in. And then you have the advent of the nuclear family, where it's just kind of like, every man for himself type thinking, and that really does not serve us as a people, and it's not a very natural fit for us. You know, I suppose I shouldn't speak for everybody, but I mean, it's not a natural fit for me, especially considering the fact that I now have my husband's sister living in my household and her five children, along with my seven children, and I you know, it's not, I don't see it as burdensome or a bother, because my sister-in-law, she helps to take care of my children. She's doing so right now as we speak. It allows me to travel and to do the work that I need to do. And, you know, vice versa, I'm able to put a roof over her head. And we cook communal meals. We very much still try to be, it's like we're trying to be traditional, but we're not, I guess you could say. We're not really trying to, doing this on purpose. It's just the way things are, and we're led by our belief system and the way we function, what we feel is important. And family is critically important, you know. So family isn't necessarily defined by those people that, you know, are blood kin to you. They're the ones that choose to be in your life and that choose to make you a part of their lives, and vice versa. So
that was Twyla Baker Demaree from Newtown, president of the college there. Next is Brenda Killsmall. She's an enrolled member of the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe, mother of six, and she's had to be resilient.
The struggles of just being a child of alcoholic parents. It was my first struggle, being born, a very unstable environment, of not knowing what tomorrow's going to bring, or if we're going to have enough food, if my mom or dad would even come home that night. A lot of worrisome moments. And I remember a time when my mom didn't come home, I would believe, for about 2 or 3 weeks, but it felt like forever to me. And we ran out of the food, and we lived out in the country, so there was no access to grocery stores or anything like that. We lived out there all alone, and it was wintertime, so there was no cars going in or out of that where we lived. And we couldn't walk to anywhere because it was cold. And I remember not eating. And I remember my sister was older than me. And there was my older sister, me, my younger brother, and my younger sister, who was the baby then. And I remember she making spaghetti for us, but we had no meat. But she made the noodles and put, we didn't have no tomato sauce, so she put ketchup in there, and we all ate it just because it was, there was nothing else to eat. But I remember my uncle showing up, thankfully, and finding us in that situation where we didn't haven't ate for days, and he took us home and took us, welcomed us into his home, and bathed us and fed us. And I remember feeling that sense of love and compassion, and just, this is how a home is supposed to be like. And but I remember that struggle of constant survival. It's just basically having to take care of yourself and fend for yourself in my childhood.
Now turning that over to an adult,
mm-hmm.
what would be some of those low points, and then to your higher point?
As an adult with my children now, I see some of that relating to as when I was a kid. There's sometimes when. There's always the food there. There's always the clean clothes on the back and the taking care of the children. But there are those times of struggle when there isn't enough sometimes. And just having to work through the day-to-day activities, I guess, and being in college and trying to find time for your studies and taking care of the kids, and sometimes when they get sick, you're not able to attend class. And I guess it's a real struggle in that sense.
Mm-hmm.
But we always make it through eventually.
That was Brenda Kilsmall.